Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
I'm so excited because the first book by Darkness Prevails and Carmen Carrion is available for pre-order right now. It's the Freaky Folklore Compendium, filled with the history and lore of the most terrifying folklore monsters across the globe, alongside some cool but creepy illustrations. Releases July 16th. Pre-order now at eeriecast.com/freak or on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and your favorite bookstore.
Way back in ancient history, deep within the heart of an enchanted forest, where the trees whisper secrets to the moonlight and shadows dance with unseen entities, stands a castle cloaked in darkness. Its towering spires pierce the sky like skeletal fingers, reaching for the heavens, while ivy-covered walls conceal centuries of forgotten tales. Locals speak of the castle in hushed tones, for they know the chilling rumors that swirl around it like the fog that clings to the forest floor. They whisper of a dragon, its fiery breath casting shadows across the land, and of witches who once held dark ceremonies within its ancient halls. Ghostly apparitions are said to roam the corridors, their mournful wails echoing through the night, while ghouls lurk in the shadows, their eyes gleaming with evil intent. Beware if you dare to venture near, for the castle holds its secrets close, guarding them fiercely against the prying eyes of the curious. Those who have dared to explore its haunted depths speak of strange occurrences and inexplicable happenings, their words serving only to fuel the castle's mysterious aura. Welcome to Destination Terror, your passport to the scariest places in the world. From haunted hotels to locations of unexplained creature sightings, and now places that we only visit in our imagination. We will travel to places that will provide excitement, adventure, and horror. Today we are visiting Wawel Hill in Krakow, Poland, a historical location that is steeped in legends and folklore. So if you're into travel and all things scary, listen close and you might just discover your next exciting adventure destination. But hopefully, not your final destination. Destination Terror is an EerieCast original podcast hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. If you would like to send us a suggestion or submit a story with your own experience, you can email them to carmencarrion@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter @carmencarrion. If you enjoy the show, please follow and rate Destination Terror on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to help us grow. Also, check out eeriecast.com for more scary podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, the podcast where together we explore horrifying legends across the world and tell terrifying tales of monsters both ancient and modern. The days had grown long, and the nights were colder than they had ever been. I was born to a young, unwed woman who lost her life giving birth to me. She had sought sanctuary near the castle with a midwife named Maria, who helped young women like her. Maria tried to save my mother, but her attempts were unsuccessful. Out of the kindness of her heart, she decided to keep me and raise me. I didn't grow up as bad as some of the other motherless children on the streets, but we were very poor and had experienced our fair share of dark, cold nights. Though the long, chilling nights have nothing to do with being poor and everything to do with survival. It's been a few weeks now in this cold darkness, every night, afraid of what had emerged on that cold, foggy evening. I was just outside the castle walls, finishing my daily deliveries, when the wind shifted and a dark shadow loomed far overhead. The wind was whipping wildly, and the fog was churning like it was being stirred from above. I thought for a moment that my ears and eyes were deceiving me because I couldn't make sense of what I was seeing. The fog began to glow a red and orange color, like it had been set on fire. And then a massive black form swooped down through the flame with a piercing screech. With its wings spread wide and more flame coming from its snout, it was coming closer and closer, but I found myself glued to the ground, unable to move or run, or do anything but gawk in shock. A dragon, a real dragon. I'd heard stories and seen many depictions and paintings over the years, but to see one with my own eyes, this was just unbelievable. I had never been this scared in my entire life, but also completely in awe of such a creature. The awe ended when the creature swooped down and started setting fire to the houses. A woman ran on the street from her burning home, fully engulfed in flames. The creature went right for her. She was so preoccupied with trying to put the fire out on her clothes that by the time she looked up at the creature, it was already clamping her into its jaws and soaring away, back high in the sky. Naturally, everyone, including myself, went running for cover. The creature didn't waste any time devouring the woman he had taken, and it came back looking for more. Nowhere felt safe. I ran to the nearest alley, between two houses, and ducked down between a few barrels that had been stacked there. I knew it wasn't much shelter, but it had to be better than nothing. I could still see the creature circling in the sky, getting closer and closer to the ground. The beast landed on the lawn, and I swear the whole ground shook. It spread its wings and opened its mouth wide as it breathed fire into the sky, followed by a bone-chilling scream. It actually sounded like the dragon screamed. It then again leapt into the sky. I lost sight of it, but you could hear the screams of others and the smell of the fire spreading. I realized that Maria had only been a few houses away, tending to an expecting mother, before the beast had appeared. I had to make sure she was okay. I unfolded from my hiding spot and peeked out into the street. The beast was nowhere to be found at the moment, and I could see the house where I had left Maria just an hour ago. Against my better judgment, I picked up my skirts and ran as fast as I could to the small house. She must have seen me coming because the door swung open, and Maria was standing there waving me inside. Though I was running, Maria still yanked me inside the house and slammed the door shut quickly. She then turned to me frantically, checking for injury. I told her I was okay and tried to reassure her, but she didn't look convinced. "Was that the dragon, Kochan?" she asked me, with the most bewildered look on her face. "I believe so. It looked just like the paintings I've seen in those storybooks you used to read me. A different color, and the features are a little different, but yes, I don't know what else it could be." It had massive horns and what looked like spikes all over its face. We both flinched when we heard the creature screaming once again. This time it was farther away, but still not far enough for our comfort. Maria motioned to put out the fire and to get quiet. The sun would be setting soon, and she was afraid that leaving the fire going would draw the beast to our presence. And it turned out she was right. We could hear the dragon circling for what felt like an eternity. It just hunkered down and chose not to speak all night. Neither of us slept at all, and come morning the beast seemed to have left. We got lucky. The beast didn't burn the whole village to the ground. Maria thanked the family for allowing the shelter through the night, and we walked back to our home in silence. Once home, we fell asleep. It wasn't normal for either of us to sleep the day away, but this time we made an exception. It was dusk outside when I finally awoke. I could tell that something good was cooking in the kitchen. I hadn't thought about food this morning, after everything the night before. There was a note on the table, next to a plate of food. Maria let me know she had people to tend to today, and that she'd be back well after dark and not to worry. Though I couldn't help but feel sick. Would the creature come back again? And if it did, when? I pushed those fears down and cleaned my plate, and it was at that moment I wished I hadn't, because the piercing sound from last night once again pierced the air like a hot blade. Every night for the past few weeks it's been the same. Dusk approaches, and the entire village puts out their fires and hides inside in hopes of avoiding the dragon's wrath. Every evening it would burn a few homes and was plucking the villagers off one by one. During the day the beast seemed to slumber, but every night, just before dark, it was back. The village knew that with winter coming on, we wouldn't survive the cold nights if we had to put out our fires every night to avoid being eaten by the dragon. We hadn't been able to find a solution, and no one was brave enough to hunt the creature down. I certainly wasn't. One morning, the whole village gathered near a large field. Everyone was shouting ideas on how to handle the dragon, and most of their ideas were either idiotic, suicidal, or just plain stupid. "Do you think we could feed it, and maybe it would leave us alone?" shouted a younger man over the increasingly frenzied crowd. Everyone's eyes turned to the young man. "Maybe it's just hungry. We just might be able to keep it from eating us if we have something to offer in our place." In the heart of Poland's historic city of Krakow stands a testament to centuries of royalty, political intrigue, and cultural richness. Welcome to Wawel Castle, a symbol of Polish sovereignty and heritage. The pronunciation of Wawel can be a bit tricky for a non-Polish speaker, such as me. The W is pronounced like the English V, so instead of pronouncing it as it looks to us in English, Wawel, it is actually pronounced Wawel. At least that is my best attempt. Wawel Hill has a long and rich woven history that spans thousands of years. The hill is just over 15 acres and sits 750 feet above sea level. Located in Krakow, Poland, serving as a site of human habitation, religious worship, political power, and other things far more sinister. The area around the hill has been inhabited since ancient times, with evidence of human settlements dating back to the Paleolithic era, around 50,000 years ago. Archaeological discoveries, including tools, pottery, and burial sites, are proof to the presence of early human communities in the vicinity of Wawel Hill. In the early medieval period, Wawel Hill emerged as a significant political and religious center in the region. The hill offered a strategic vantage point, overlooking the Vistula River and the surrounding plains, making it an ideal location for fortifications and defensive structures. By the 10th century, Wawel Hill became the residence of Polish rulers, who built palaces, churches, and administrative buildings on the site. The city Krakow was believed to have been founded by a legendary Polish prince by the name of Krakus. He was the ruler of the Vistulans, a West Slavic tribe. After establishing Krakow, the prince eventually became king over the region. This particular Polish monarch has quite the history. Not only is he known for Krakow, he's also known for slaying the Wawel dragon that lived deep under the hill that he founded his empire on. The legend of the Wawel dragon, also known as the Dragon of Wawel Hill, is quite the mysterious one. The Wawel dragon itself is a creature of nightmares, its monstrous form covered in scales, its monstrous form adorned with scales, razor-sharp claws, and a breath of fire that consumes all in its path. Whether depicted with wings or as a serpent-like behemoth, the dragon's presence strikes fear into the hearts of Krakow's inhabitants. According to legend, the Wawel dragon dwelled in a cavernous lair beneath Wawel Hill, emerging under the cover of darkness to unleash havoc upon the city. Its insatiable appetite for livestock and its penchant for terrorizing the populace demanded regular sacrifices to quell its wrath. Faced with the daunting task of quelling the dragon's rampage, King Krakus devised a daring challenge to rid the city of its fearsome foe. He declared that whoever could vanquish the dragon would earn the hand of his daughter, Princess Wanda, and ascend to the throne as the city's hero. Brave warriors from far and wide answered the call, eager to confront the beast and claim the coveted prize. But one by one, they fell victim to the dragon's strength and cunning, their valiant efforts proving futile against its might. As hope dwindled and despair gripped the city, a humble shoemaker named Scuba emerged with a plan to outwit the dragon. Scuba, fueled by determination and ingenuity, devised a cunning trick to exploit the dragon's gluttonous nature. Craftily, he fashioned a sheep's skin, filled not with hay alone, but with a potent mixture of hay and sulfur. With his trap set, Scuba offered the bait to the dragon, tempting it with the promise of a hearty meal. The dragon, driven by its insatiable hunger, greedily devoured the decoy, unaware of the deadly trap concealed within. The sulfur, igniting a thirst more intense than any it had known, compelled the dragon to race to the nearby Vistula River in search of relief. There it drank voraciously, until the sulfur-laden water ignited within its belly, causing it to meet a fiery death. In fulfillment of his promise, King Krakus bestowed upon Scuba the hand of Princess Wanda and the mantle of heroism. And to this day, the legacy of Scuba's cunning triumph over the Wawel dragon endures. Amidst the jubilation that followed the dragon's demise, a curious twist emerged in the tale of Scuba's triumph. Despite Scuba's cunning and bravery, it was King Krakus who claimed credit for slaying the dragon, garnering adulation and praise from his subjects. King Krakus, ever mindful of his standing and authority, saw an opportunity to solidify his rule and bolster his reputation as a wise and powerful monarch. Recognizing the fervent desire of his people for a hero to admire and rally behind, he seized upon the dragon's defeat as a chance to elevate his own image and secure his legacy. By attributing the dragon's demise to his own decree and leadership, King Krakus sought to reinforce the perception of his divine right to rule and his role as the protector of his kingdom. In doing so, he not only consolidated his power, but also ensured that his name would be forever linked with the legendary tale of the Wawel dragon. While Scuba's cunning plan had vanquished the beast, it was King Krakus who basked in the glory of victory, held as the valiant hero who had saved his people from certain destruction. And so amidst the celebrations and accolades, Scuba's role in the slaying of the dragon was overshadowed, relegated to the shadows of history, as King Krakus claimed his place as the triumphant ruler of Krakow. Over time, Scuba's story emerged, and is still retold today. Today, visitors flock to Krakow to witness the dragon's lair beneath Wawel Hill and pay their respects to its memory at the iconic statue that stands as a sentinel to the legend. The statue is crafted from bronze and depicts the fearsome creature with scaled skin, sharp claws, and flames emanating from its mouth. Designed by a Polish sculptor, Bronisław Chromy, it was unveiled in 1972 to commemorate the tale of King Krakus and the dragon. Standing over 5 meters tall, the statue commands attention with its intricate detailing and imposing presence. It's a symbol of resilience and the triumph of good over evil, drawing visitors to admire its beauty and reflect on the power of myth. After the death of King Krakus, his heir Princess Wanda took the throne. The realm faced a threat from a neighboring prince who sought to conquer Krakow. Faced with the prospect of being forced into marriage with the invading prince, even though as far as we know she was already married to a commoner, she made a fateful decision. Rather than submit to a union that would betray her people and her principles, she chose to sacrifice herself for the greater good of her kingdom. In some versions of the legend, Princess Wanda took her own life by drowning herself in the waters of the Vistula River, thus denying her would-be suitor the satisfaction of conquest. In doing so, she became a martyr for her people, a symbol of resistance against oppression, and a source of inspiration for generations to come. Over the centuries, Wawel Hill underwent numerous transformations and architectural developments, reflecting changes in political power, artistic styles, and cultural influences. Gothic, Renaissance, and Baroque elements can be seen in the architecture of the elaborate Wawel Castle that sits atop the hill. In the early Middle Ages, the castle served as a fortified stronghold guarding the strategic Wawel Hill, overlooking the Vistula River. Built around the 10th century, the castle played a crucial role in the defense of the region and the consolidation of political power. Constructed primarily of wood and earthworks, in its earliest form, the castle served as a residence for the ruling monarchs of the Piast dynasty who ruled the Kingdom of Poland. Its location atop Wawel Hill provided a natural defensive advantage, allowing for a commanding view of the surrounding landscape and easy monitoring of river traffic. During this period, Wawel Castle would have been a relatively modest structure compared to the grandeur it later achieved. It likely consisted of wooden fortifications, including defensive walls, towers, and a keep surrounded by palisades for added protection. The interior would have housed living quarters, storage facilities, and spaces for administrative and ceremonial purposes. Wawel Castle's significance in the early Middle Ages extended beyond its military and defensive functions. It served as a center of political power, where monarchs held court, conducted affairs of state, and hosted visiting dignitaries. The castle also played a role in the religious life of the kingdom, with the nearby Wawel Cathedral serving as the coronation site of Polish kings. While its physical appearance and functions may have evolved over time, its importance as a seat of power remained constant, laying the foundation for its future prominence in Polish history. Like most castles that have seen near a millennia come and go, its halls are not lacking in the horrors that they have witnessed. One legend that still dwells within the walls of the castle is that of the White Lady. The specter known as the White Lady casts a haunting shadow over the ancient halls of the castle. Her presence, steeped in tragedy and sorrow, tells a story of intrigue that ensnares the hearts and minds of both locals and visitors. Legend and history intertwine, attributing the White Lady's apparition to none other than Queen Bona Sforza, a noblewoman of Italian descent who wedded King Sigismund I of Poland during the tumultuous 16th century. Queen Bona's life, rife with heartache and political machinations, unfolded as a tragic saga marked by the untimely demise of several of her children and the pernicious webs of courtly intrigue. It is whispered that the spirit of Queen Bona, clad in the robes as white as the moon's pallid glow, wanders the maze of corridors and shadowed chambers of Wawel Castle. Her mournful cries, like echoes of past sorrows, reverberate through the ancient stone, serving as a chilling harbinger of impending doom to those who chance upon her spectral image. Yet amidst the whispers of doom and despair, tales abound of the White Lady's ceaseless yearning for her lost children, for solace in an unforgiving world, for redemption beyond the veil of mortality. Some claim to have caught a glimpse of her ghostly form, drifting like a wraith across the castle grounds, her presence illuminated by the eerie glow of the moon's silvery rays. Wawel Hill and Wawel Castle hold significant symbolic importance in Polish history and national identity. The hill is often regarded as the spiritual and cultural heart of Poland, embodying the nation's resilience, heritage, and sense of unity. Another enduring legend is that of the Wawel Witches. These tales depict the witches as mysterious figures who inhabit the hidden corners of the forest and the castle, wielding their arcane powers with both benevolence and malevolence. According to some, the witches are guardians of ancient wisdom and secrets, possessing deep knowledge of herbalism, divination, and the mystical arts. They were believed to commune with the spirits of nature, harnessing their energies to heal the sick, protect the innocent, or exact revenge upon those who incurred their wrath. However, they were renowned for their malevolence, as tales often illustrate such things. These witches wielded the ability to cast curses and hexes upon those who crossed them or offended their sensibilities. Their spells brought misfortune, illness, or even death upon victims of their kin. Skilled manipulators, the Wawel witches deceived unsuspecting travelers or villagers for their own gain. They ensnared victims with promises of power or wealth, only to betray them in the end. Practitioners of dark magic, the witches harnessed natural and supernatural forces to pursue their sinister agendas. Through ancient rituals and concoctions, they summoned malevolent spirits and enacted spells to fulfill their nefarious desires. When provoked or wronged, the Wawel witches sought vengeance with ruthless determination. They unleashed calamity and suffering upon their enemies, showing no mercy to those who dared to oppose them. In some accounts, the witches corrupted the innocent, preying upon the vulnerable and exploiting their fears or desires. They lured children into their clutches or ensnared the unwary with deceit, leading them into darkness and despair. But the Wawel witches weren't the last supernatural entities to wreak havoc at Wawel Castle. Next was the Wawel ghouls. They are among the most feared creatures in the folklore surrounding the hill. These malevolent entities are said to dwell in the darkest depths of the hill's forests, lurking in hidden lairs and caverns, far from the prying eyes of humans. Described as twisted and grotesque, the Wawel ghouls are believed to have a humanoid form, but with twisted features and elongated limbs that give them an unnatural appearance. Their skin is said to be pale and leathery, stretched taut over their emaciated frames, while their eyes burn with an evil gleam in the darkness. These creatures are said to be nocturnal hunters, emerging from their hiding places under the cover of night to stalk their prey. With razor-sharp claws and fangs, they are said to be relentless in their pursuit of flesh, showing no mercy to those who cross their path. According to the legend, the Wawel ghouls have a particular taste for human flesh, and they are said to prey upon unsuspecting travelers who venture too deep into the woods around the hill. Once captured, their victims are dragged back to the ghouls' lairs to be devoured, their screams echoing through the night as they meet a gruesome end. Despite the terrifying tales surrounding them, sightings of the Vavel ghouls are rare, and many dismiss them as nothing more than superstition or legend. However, for those who dare to explore the shadowy depths of the Vavel Hills forests, the fear of encountering these malevolent creatures remains very real. Today, Vavel Hill is a major tourist attraction in Krakow, drawing visitors from around the world to explore its historic buildings, museums, and panoramic views of the city. But Vavel Hill is more than just a picturesque landscape. It is steeped in centuries of folklore and legend, with tales of ancient curses, mythical creatures, and mysterious witches, casting a haunting shadow over its storied past. From the legendary Vavel dragon to the spectral presence of the White Lady, the hill is alive with the echoes of its mysterious past. As you explore Vavel Hill, you'll have the opportunity to delve into its rich tapestry of folklore, wandering through the castle's historic chambers, venturing into the dragon's den, and perhaps even encountering remnants of ancient settlements in the archaeological reserve below. But beware, for with the beauty of Vavel Hill comes a sense of unease, as if the spirits of the past still linger, waiting to reveal their secrets to those brave enough to uncover them. Oddly enough, none of us had considered feeding the beast, but it might actually work. But how much would you need to feed a hungry dragon to satiate its hunger? Well, the dragon takes 3 people every night. I've been counting. It's always 3. I witnessed it grab 3 people in less than a minute, a few nights ago. As soon as it had them all, it left. 3 seems to be its number. So maybe tonight we build a large fire and offer 3 cows to the dragon. It sounded crazy. So crazy it just might work. Everyone wasted no time gathering wood, and 3 different farmers offered a cow each. We spent the afternoon gathering the wood for the fire, and the man who had the idea brought the 3 cows. We will set it ablaze just before dusk and hope it takes the bait, the man said. Like clockwork, the sun began to set, and the dragon's silhouette appeared in the sky. One brave soul had volunteered to stay near the woodpile in order to start the fire when the dragon appeared. He would be ready to stick a torch in the fire and run like hell to the woods at the edge of the clearing. The dragon made a straight line to the growing fire in the field. I had spent every night hiding inside from the dragon, but seeing it up close like this was surreal. It was covered in thick black scales, but there was something beautiful about its wickedness. The dragon soared lower and lower toward the fire and the cows. It approached the fire and waited no time swooping in and plucking up one of the cows. One after the other, he plucked them up. The beast remained circling in the sky over the large fire for a few moments before it banked hard to the left and circled back into the clouds and disappeared. We were far too scared to cheer, but you could feel the excitement in the air. The dragon had gone, and we could have warm, peaceful beds that night. Fires lit up all across the village, and the smell of smoke was thick. We had all spent weeks in the darkness at night, too afraid to light a fire to keep warm. I know Maria and I were celebrating the small victory that night as well. Every evening for the next few weeks, we all gathered in the same field to build the fire and offer the sacrifice to the dragon. But one night, the farmer showed up, and he only had 1 cow. The dragon had eaten almost every cow in the village, and this farmer was offering his last one. No one wanted to say it, But we all feared that one wouldn't be enough to satisfy the beast. Like every night, a volunteer would light the fire and run into the woods. This night, it was my turn. With only one cow to offer, I just knew this was going to go wrong. As the sun began to dip low into the sky, the village held its breath, awaiting the arrival of the dreaded dragon. The lone cow stood tethered near the blazing fire, its plaintive mooing echoing through the silent evening, the sound of crickets echoing in the background. Suddenly, a dark silhouette appeared on the horizon, growing larger with each passing moment. The dragon, sensing the feast laid out before it, descended swiftly from the clouds, its massive wings casting shadows over the trembling villagers. With a thunderous roar, the dragon swooped down upon the fire, its eyes ablaze with hunger and fury. It wasted no time in seizing the lone cow, its powerful jaws clamping down on the helpless creature before it could even let out a cry. The beast's hunger seemed insatiable as it devoured the offering, its jaws snapping greedily at the flesh. With a disdainful click of its tail, the dragon finished its meal and turned its gaze upon the village once more. But to the horror of the villagers, the dragon's appetite remained unsated. With a deafening roar, it unleashed a torrent of flames upon the village, engulfing homes and crops in a blazing inferno. Panic erupted among the villagers as they fled for their lives, the dragon's wrath consuming everything in its path. In the chaos and confusion, I could only watch helplessly as the flames consumed the village, the once hopeful plan now ending in devastation. As the smoke cleared and the last embers died away, the village lay in ruins. The dragon had taken its toll once again, leaving behind only ashes and despair. The monster flew up into the sky, and I thought it was safe to come out of hiding, to get help to put out the fires that were burning. We had to get them put out. I'd soon discover that leaving my place of cover was a really bad idea. I was helping bucket water onto some of the smoldering flames when the dreaded screech of the creature pierced the air once again. Everyone standing outside dropped their buckets and ran for cover. I was no exception. I ran as fast as I could down the narrow streets towards my house that was probably nothing but ashes. But seconds before I reached the charred remains of my home, I could see the fire that was consuming me. Seconds before the jaws of the beast closed over me. My last thoughts were of Maria and how I would never be able to thank her for all she had done for me. Thank you for joining us on our journey to Vavel Hill. Tune in next week as we discuss another terrific location. I'm Carmen Carrion. Remember, you can send me suggestions and stories of haunted places to my email, carmencarrion@gmail.com, or follow me on Twitter @carmencarrion. Go to eeriecast.com to find other terrifying podcasts, such as Freaky Folklore, hosted by me, Carmen Carrion. Until next time, stay safe out there until I see you at our next destination.